We're working our way through the Gospel of John today. We're starting with John, the 13th chapter, and then it's Jesus winding down his ministry, actually. This was not intentional that things are coming together as they are, and yet it really seems like God is working in the midst of some of the scripture passages that we're using and what this is in Jesus' life. I invite you to stand for the reading of the gospel lesson. It was before the festival of Passover. Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Now, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." Well, then Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." And Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him, and for this reason he said, "Not all of you." After Jesus had washed their feet, had put on his robe, and had returned to the table, he said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example that you also should do as I have done to you. Truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them." This is the word of our Lord. Thanks be to God. Please be seated. If there's anything that can be said truthfully about Jesus, it's that he knows what it is to be human. And we are blessed by that somehow or another in this incarnation of God, that not only was God in Jesus fully present, but also that Jesus was fully present with God, and that the two had merged in that mystical reunion or union. And the Nicene Creed being one of the early church's initial attempts to try to put that into words, put the mysterious into some kind of words, which is no easy task. Perhaps you've tried it. Some of my professors would claim that I tried to put the mysterious into words in some of my research papers and didn't do so well. But it is difficult to put such things into words, and so it's images. And so last week we talked about the I am statements: I am the gate, I am the shepherd, I am the bread, I am the living water. Attempting to put the mysterious and the mystical, the otherworldly even, into human images and forms is difficult. But Jesus understands what it is to be human, and that comes through especially in these next four or five chapters of the Gospel of John, as Jesus, the way that John has written and edited his account of the life of Jesus, so much of his instructions are in this final week of this final week of Jesus' life, and he's focusing on that because he knows how difficult it will be for them to move forward in this time of their life together. And so one of the things that I look at it as is anxiety, and Jesus understands the anxiety of human beings. And so he knows, for example, that anxiety represses human functioning. When we get anxious, we're just not able to function at the same level that we otherwise might. It decreases our capacity to learn, to integrate all of the information and resources that we have around us. It replaces curiosity and openness with this expectation, maybe even a demand for certainty. And so we become stiff, inflexible, and our positions quite often are opposed, or anyway, we take up an oppositional kind of stance with one another. Jesus knows that. If you want to think about Jesus' response to Thomas, now of course this this story happens the last week of Jesus' life. It's in the upper room. And so the resurrection story comes very shortly. You remember that Thomas was not in the room when Jesus first appeared to the other. By that time, there's 10 disciples because Judas is off the charts. Thomas wasn't there. So Jesus appeared to the other, the resurrected Jesus appeared to the other 10. Thomas wasn't there. Thomas said, "I will not believe unless I actually put my finger in the wound of his hand and my hand in his side." You remember that? Well, Jesus understood that, and so the first thing he did the next time he shows up is what? "Thomas, I understand how you want certainty. I understand how you're solid in your position, how your anxiety is not allowing you to believe in the same respects. Here, put your hand in my side." And Thomas's response, of course, is simply, "My Lord and my God." First statement of faith. Very, very succinct. But anxiety is also contagious, and it spreads like a bad virus, and it can affect a whole team. It can affect a whole community. It can affect a whole church. In fact, let one or two people unleash their anxiety, and it won't be long before all kinds of people can be gathered up in that same anxiety, and it just builds and multiplies and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And so Jesus knew that, and so he acts in such a way and goes through these next five chapters, actually, in John's gospel to kind of deal with it the best he can. So if you want to keep in mind that in the Gospel of Luke, when the resurrected Jesus shows up, Jesus says the angel in the tomb says to the women who showed up at the tomb, the angel says, "Just go tell the disciples." See how they're trying to deal with the anxiety of the whole thing? So the angel says, "Hey, go and tell the disciples," and anybody remember what else they said? "And Peter." Yeah. "Go tell the disciples and Peter that Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee, and he will see you and he will meet you there." And so what's that all about? Peter had more reason than anybody to have anxiety, and to let that anxiety, he was also pretty central in the troop and the disciples gang there, and if Peter wasn't with it, it could be a contagious kind of situation and detrimental. So the angel says, "Go tell the disciples and Peter, because we don't want to leave anybody hanging out here. We don't want to leave any room for the contagion of anxiety to have room to roam." And so, anyway, and then anxiety is also paralyzing, because we can oversimplify and become indecisive and make it difficult to commit. You've probably heard of a coach. Not any of you, because your team would never do this, but you've probably heard coaches say, "You know, we practiced it, we knew what they were going to do, but they just failed to function. They failed to execute." I think that's the word that the coach is using when this happens with a team. They got anxious and they failed to execute. That would be one of those words to watch for in the post-game interview. they failed to execute. They got anxious, and they didn't do what they were supposed to do. It's interesting then that in the remainder of John 13, John 14, John 15, John 16, and John 17, I don't know how many chapters that is, that's a lot. But anyway, in those chapters, over and over again, in a variety of ways, what does Jesus invite the disciples to do? He invites them, he commands them, he tells them, he asks them, he deplores them, implores them, and he begs them to do as I have done. This is the first example of it, as he says to his disciples, I've washed your feet, go and do likewise. Blessed are you if you do what I have done. People will know you are my followers if you keep my commandments. And that's a constant theme throughout these chapters of John, this exit message, this exit speech that Jesus is giving. Do as I have done, even if you don't believe it or have it in your heart, do as I have done, Jesus says. Now, sometimes we can, and in fact, that's been a wrap on the Gospel of John, is that it's so heavenly-minded that it's no earthly good, but you get to these chapters in the Gospel of John, and it's all about live it. You've seen what I have done. You've seen the healings that I've done. You've seen the encouragement that I've provided to people of all levels and ages and races, and now go do it, and the world will be changed. And so, yeah, the coach is telling his team, we've practiced this. You're prepared for it. Just do what I told you to do. Isn't that cool? Pretty simple, isn't it? And sometimes we make it too hard as Christians to figure out how to do, or what we can afford or what we can't afford, or what we can't do because we don't have the people. Just do as Jesus has done. And so, even now, there might be some things that we as a church can learn from that. There might be some things in that story that we as a pastor can also learn from these stories. One of the most important things we've done, I believe, and Brian, if we can go to that next one. well, even the one before this one. You see, anxiety is counter to purpose. If we've lost purpose, we build anxiety. If we get too anxious, we lose our purpose. And it's hard to say one from the other. It's hard to say which one comes first, chicken or the egg. But purpose is central to anxiety. If we know what we're here for, it doesn't matter what gets in our way. It doesn't matter how big the other team is, how fast they are. If we know that we're here to go from here to there as fast as we can, that's our purpose. We just do it. And so this is our mission as a church, to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. Now, anything else, that's our purpose, that's our mission, and so that's what we do. Anything else that's in the way of that is just something that we deal with as we go, but we know where we're headed. We're here to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. What your leadership, what your committees, and individuals, we hope more and more that as individuals, that's all we use for guiding our decisions as a community of Christ. We're here to make disciples of Jesus Christ. Anything else, and keep in mind that Jesus has told us that's our purpose. If you wondered, just go to Matthew 28, last couple verses, 19 and 20 in Matthew 28. That's what we're supposed to do, is make disciples. And so anything, and so if Jesus tells you to do something, Jesus will give you the energy and the power and the direction to get it done. You've proved that to me over and over. That's one of the things I'll take from here. Don't ever doubt. And in fact, I'll just tell you that you're feeding something that I learned in the very first church that I served, Little Church of Ventura. Now, I was getting paid just about $9,000 after, and I remember so well, my last W, what do you turn into your tax person at the end of the year? W-2. My last W-2 is, When I was teaching and working construction, I remember it was about $26,000. And then you go from there to $9,000. You get scared? It's amazing. Anxiety, I'll tell you, okay? But we never went hungry. And sometimes we were literally down to the last dollar and the prayers were being prayed. And I still don't know where some of the checks came from, although I came out of a loving church. Two churches, actually, Alden and Popejoy. And I have a hunch. But I'll tell you what, it was amazing. But if God tells you to do something, God will make it happen. All right? It's just the way it is. And so then when we started that whole process of making this a functional ministry center, we tried that out all over again, didn't we? And we found out that it works, that God is, that if we're doing what God wants us to do and has commanded us to do, God will make it happen. And so that's the mission. If you keep your eyes on what your purpose is and what you're here for, God will make it happen, and it'll take a lot of work from everybody here as well. Okay, now there's another thing we have, and this is what we call the vision statement. And this has been worked out, and this was not as easy, frankly, as the mission statement. But First United Methodist Church provides value to people in their journey of faith by meaningful corporate worship, we hope and pray, and it might not be the message. This is not where the meaning necessarily is. I've never claimed to be a great preacher, by the way. It might be in just your presence here and the encouragement that you're giving to somebody else, to just by your presence here, by your singing, by your playing, by whatever, by ushering, by greeting, by being a smile, by giving somebody a handshake who hasn't had a touch all week, whatever it might be. By meaningful corporate worship, even just praying the Lord's Prayer together with other people, even if you do it every day by yourself, it's different in this setting, corporate worship. It's even different, like when we were on television. The people who tune in, or in my early days, we had tape ministry at Ventura and Cedar Falls and up to 30 places. These tapes have got every week. They didn't get them for the sermons. The people got the tapes for the music, for the singing, for the congregational singing, because a lot of them could sing it, just sing along. And the other thing, they got the tapes because they could say the Lord's Prayer with their church. Corporate worship, even if you're alone in your house, but if you have somebody to pray it with. Powerful, powerful. Don't ever underestimate that. So anyway, by meaningful corporate worship, continual growth through small group and personal challenge. That's an operative line there. We talked a lot about that. Small group and personal challenge. Is this a time of challenge right here? As we undergo any kind of transition, and I don't care if you're in business or farming, or if you're in a situation where you've had your first child or your oldest child goes off to college, all of that is transition. It's a challenge. And in all challenges, it's an opportunity for us to look anew at our faith and our relationship with God through Jesus Christ. And so this is an opportunity. Difficult in some respects, joyous for others, but it's a challenge and an opportunity to grow. And then we provide value to people in their journey of faith by mission, by service in the church and community. This is basically our membership vows too, where we commit to service in the church and in the community, in the world. It's not just if we put all of our energy in the church at 607 Lynn Street, we've not understood the gospel. We have to take something outside of here too. And so wonderful if you're here in this building every time the doors are unlocked, but if this is the only place you're spending your Christian energy, think again. It's also out there. And then, of course, our summary statement with the tree that I didn't put on this slide is our people will be deeply rooted, branching out, bearing fruit. And those are operative for us as a community of faith. The mission statement, our purpose, and the vision statement, what our purpose is and what we will become, because the vision statement is what we will become eventually. That's our goal, way out there. If we attain it in your lifetime or mine, then we haven't written it big enough. But eventually, that's what we will become. That's the prayer. Those will not change. And I didn't bring them here, and the next pastor won't bring anything here. Those are yours. Those are what you are about. Those identify First United Methodist Church of Tipton. You are the ones to make sure that those are worked on, carried out, used as guidelines in whatever you do and become. And so it isn't that we've lost all. We're just refocusing. We will have some new energy. We'll have some new guidance. And that's great. And a lot of that playground can change. Our discipleship playground can change. And how we term things. But the purpose and the vision do not change. We continue. We're not without tools to help us in this season. You have a history. And it's told one story at a time. One of the stories that has been very meaningful for me about this church is Reverend Eugene Miller's story about the building of the education wing. And how Don Hargrave, somebody in the pews, came to Gene Miller and they went through the building. I believe it was the day before church conference, if I remember Gene's story correctly. And if you know Gene, you know that this story took about 40 minutes to tell. But Don took him through the entire building, and of course it was only this building at that point, and said, you know how many kids we have in here, and that's not right. And we need to have better facilities if we're gonna be a church to really produce the disciples. And I don't know what terms they use, but we have to have better facilities for Sunday school. And Gene just said, and the next day Don Hargrave basically went into church conference and said, here's the motion, we need to build an education wing, and Don Hargrave and some other people made it happen. Some of you, how many of you were here at that point? This is 50 years ago. Raise them with pride, you bet, yeah. And then of course it was the next year after the building was done, the next year, Little Friends Preschool, also known then as, what was the name it was known as then? Mary Poppins. Walter, as in Disney, had a problem with Mary Poppins after a few years, and so Lorna came up with the new name. And so now it becomes at least a six-day-a-week ministry center for this community and our own children. That's part of your story. That's part of who you are. That's part of your statement about where shall the kids be in this church, and as a priority, will there be part of it? We didn't have to make that up. We inherited that from way back, and it continues to this day. And so, that's a core value for this church. The children have always been a core value. 9 out of the last 10 years, you've increased the number of children in Sunday school. That's been a lot of work. And if you've not been part of it, you've missed out on part of your church's big, big story. I invite you to consider, seeing where you can add something to that, even if it's just bring some hot dogs and come and eat at the Little Friends end-of-year picnic. I believe that core value of children was present when Little Friends Preschool was faced with either closing or being sold out or transferred to another owner. There wasn't a lot of pain to make that decision to spend $4,000 to buy the preschool and to take it over, because it's part of who you are. It's in your DNA that the children have to be taken care of, and we'll do it. We'll do whatever is necessary to make that happen. You see how, and if it wasn't in your core values, it would have been a lot harder. And it would have taken forever to come up with $4,000 for that. It wasn't in the budget. It happened. Because I believe this is why it happened. Because you decided to do what Jesus told us to do. And then things happen when we just do what Jesus tells us to do. The journey isn't over yet. And we may wish it were different, but just think of the Israelites, 40 years in the wilderness looking at the breadth and depth of the Holy Land, on the other side of the Jordan River Valley, seeing the promised land, and yet it would entail much struggle yet. You know, I wish if we do the right thing, and maybe you can identify with this, it wouldn't it be great if just doing the right thing would be easy? You agree? That just doing the right thing isn't necessarily easy, doesn't make it like falling off a log. Just doing the right thing does not make it easy. But it happens. And we feel fulfilled as we go on. And so, you know, another thing I'm going to mention right here. This week I looked at, and I thought I brought it with me, but maybe I didn't. I looked at the dedication program for when they remodeled the sanctuary in 1947-48. In other words, the building was built in 1904. It was dramatically remodeled. This whole level was dramatically remodeled in 1947-48. They had a dedication service, kind of a rededication service, on the 21st of November in 1948. On page 3 of that rededication service, it talks about the United Methodist Church, the Methodist Church, starting in 1841. And I had Barry check my math on this week. That means that this year is your 175th birthday. Is that kind of cool? Is that something that, it isn't bad to mark such birthdays and to remember what have we done, where have we come from, and how does that inform where we are and where we're headed? And so that's a big thing. Tell the stories of the past. Keep telling the stories of the past. Keep saying prayers for guidance for today, but remember that God is always drawing us into a new future. The new thing that God is doing. He said it back to Isaiah, and he's saying it to us, and he's never stopped. And the risen Christ is out there, and all he says is, do what I have done. Do what I have commanded you to do. If you read those chapters, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 of John, you're going to hear that over and over again, and I invite you to keep that on your glasses, in your lens.